With my glasses.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, the sun is out. It's not raining. The Weather Bureau got it all wrong, thank goodness. And this is going to be fun because this is going to be a different type of show. This is going to be Entertainment News with Fran Lewis. Haha, I just changed the name of the show, people. And we're going to talk to entertainer, comedian, singer, author, writer, and a whole lot more. We're going to talk to Sal Richards this morning. Hi, Sal. How you doing?
Hold on. Let me see if he's here. I mean, you said all those things that he does, but I think you got the wrong person. Let me go find him. I'm fine, Fran. How are you? Great to talk to you.
Oh, this is so much fun. First of all, let me tell you that my nephew got a kick out of your answers when you helped him with the essay on profanity.
Oh, yeah?
He made me do one. Yeah, he did. He thought that was really cool. His teacher really thought it was cool. And he said, you know, how do you know, Sal? Which is, my aunt knows everybody. Don't worry about it. It's okay. And I don't think my nephew realized what I did, what I do. They still don't really know. Until then, and I had you, and I had a couple of people that I know from worked in the FBI, and I had a whole bunch of people, and he said, like, Salvage, just said, okay, boom. And Stanley Director did it, and he was like, oh, my God, he's, like, talking to himself.
Oh, that's great. You see, like with me, when I first started out in the business, my manager had no idea what I did either. You know, he managed me for 2 years, and he got me 6 fights. He thought I was a boxer.
Oh, God, help us.
He said, I can get you in the Madison Square Garden. You can fight in the amateurs. I said, I do comedy. He said, well, make them laugh while you're in the ring. I said, yeah, you're out of your mind.
They were crazy.
Some of these agents and managers are crazy. They think they could move your career up by doing something else. He knew I was a comedian, but he was just trying to get an incentive to get me out to the public. I says, and what if I get knocked out? Where do I go from there? I says, go do what you got to do. Go find somebody else.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That same nephew got hurt wrestling. Josh is into wrestling, and he's on the wrestling team, and the guy, he's really good.
Yeah.
But somebody pinned him down, and he wound up in the hospital with a concussion. You don't know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You don't know.
So your
How
career
can you get
began.
Hurt on stage telling jokes? Go ahead.
Yeah. Your career began in the Catskills, where I grew up.
Well, it didn't actually start there.
Yeah. Where did you start?
It started there as a comedian, but it really started many, many years before that. I put a group together during the 50s era, late 50s, and we put a singing group together called the Royal Airs. And we were doing some backup singing for some other artists in the business. We were doing the harmony backgrounds, and we were in a studio one day doing harmony for one of the singers. I even forget who it is now. It was so long ago. And there was a guy there and said, listen, I'd like to take you down the street and meet this guy, Lee Clark. He's looking for new singing groups. I said, sure, why not? So the five of us went down there. We auditioned for him, and he signed us to a contract, and we made 4 sides. We did 4 records. We traveled around the country, and we made Baby Baby, Friendship Ring, You're in Love, Please Don't Leave Me Now. And, you know, it went well for a while, you know. But then all that payola stuff started in those days. And this guy really didn't have a lot of money because he wasn't a major label. When I tell you the name of the label, you get to know why. The label was called Gallo Records. So figure that out. So, and they tried and we tried, and actually, what happened? That's how I was always a clown. I always used to get in trouble in school, making people laugh, and the teachers thought I was being boisterous and obnoxious in the classroom. But I was just doing it to get laughs. So when I had this group, the Royal Airs, we were booked at a club in Long Island called the Las Vegas Supper Club, and we were singing there. And we did a good job, you know. We were doing okay. And all of a sudden, the owner comes over to me. He says, we'd like to keep you guys on steady. Do you have a band of any kind, or do you just sing? So me, I said, yeah, we can get a band together. Don't worry about it. So I put a band together because he wanted us to play intermission music between the big band that he had there and between the shows. So there we were at the Las Vegas Supper Club, now signed on for 10 weeks as the house band, intermission band. And one night, the comedian that was on the show, the comic MC, they called him in those days, had a breakdown with his vehicle, and he called the club and says, I can't get there in time for the show. So the boss came over to me. I'll never forget his name, Frank Braglia. He says, Sal, can you do me a favor? I see you're very loose on stage with the band. Do you think you can MC the show tonight for us? I said, sure, don't worry about it. So I went out and I started the show, and good evening, welcome to the Las Vegas Supper Club, and showtime and all of that stuff, and told a couple of jokes that I knew and stuff like that, brought the first act on, told a couple of more jokes, brought the next act on, and the next thing I know, the guy says, you want to stay here as the comic MC? I said, what happens with the band? He says, no, they could stay too. He says, but I'd like you to put you on steady as the comic MC. I says, okay, that's good with me. I says, but I can't do that and play with the band. I'll get somebody else to play the bass with the band. So that was good for me, because now all I had to do was show up at the club, and I didn't have to bring my bass and my amplifier and all of that. So I just showed up. And I wound up working there for 20 weeks as the house MC. And if you want to say that's how I got started as a comic, that's how I got started doing comedy, from doing that club.
That's amazing, because if he couldn't have made it, you would not have had that particular job. That's great.
Wouldn't have occurred. But I was always a clown. You know, I was always kidding around with the band. Even in other clubs that we worked with the band, I would front the band and do shtick with the band, and you know, make up routines and have people laughing in between our sets and stuff like that. So I think I knew where I wanted to go then, but I didn't know how I was going to approach it at the time.
Sometimes you don't know. It just winds up doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But I saw something that was interesting, because my parents used to take us away to the mountain, to Catskills, you know, whenever. Mm-hmm. And the Laurels? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Grossinger's and Concord. And my mother's
Absolutely.
Favorite place was Kutch's Country Club.
Yeah, I worked there a lot at Kutch's. I worked them all. I worked every hotel up there. That was in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Because actually, I really started on the Bocce Belt.
Mm.
That was the Italian side of the mountains. You know, Haines Falls, Leeds, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up, when I was doing comedy, I wound up opening at a place called the Villa Roma with Lou Monti. I don't know if you remember who Lou Monti was, but he was a novelty singer of Italian songs. He was very famous. So I opened for him there. And another thing happened. They were looking for a social director. So when I finished my weekend, they asked me if I wanted to stay on. Can I do calisthenics? Can I do games? Can I do this with the people? I said, yeah, why not? You know, and I was just married at the time. I had two boys, and I says, well, where are we going to stay? So they gave us a place to stay, and I wound up working there for 3 years as a social director.
Oh, Mark,
and
I could see you doing that.
I was doing tumult with the people, and calisthenics on the patio in the morning, and having bocce tournaments and ping pong tournaments and all kinds of stuff. I did everything from morning till night. And at night, I was the MC in the nightclub. If there was a singer on the show, I was the opening comic. If there was a comic on the show, I was the opening singer. So it really gave me time to hone my craft. I gained a lot of experience by doing that. So, you know, that was an asset for me. And then I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. And I got an agent, and I started getting booked around in local clubs for garbage money and a sandwich. You know, I remember one place the guy says, well, we'll feed you. I says, yeah, but that's not going to feed my family. You're going to give me food to bring home in a bag? I'll do the show for food, you know, but I got to get food for my family. So how do I do that if I don't get any money?
That's ridiculous.
But I did it, and I struggled through it. I struggled through it, and I did it.
That is. Did you ever work in any of the larger bungalow colonies? Did you ever do any comedy there?
I did two seasons in the bungalow colonies, and something happened one time in one of them, and I said to the agent, I will never, ever work a bungalow colony as long as I live. This is what
I hope it wasn't the one I went to.
I don't know. What was the name of the one you went to?
We went to one that was very, very little when I was younger, but they didn't have any shows there because if they had 12 families and they were all, you know, monopolized by my family, was Breezy Corners on the Joyland Road. Was owned by
I know where Breezy Corners is, right behind the Concord.
Yes, on the Joyland Road. It was owned by Edith and Sam Miller.
Yes, exactly.
You know
Edith,
yeah.
Right.
Edith Miller. And Edith,
they had shows there.
Yes, they did. And they even built a nightclub there that was huge.
Right.
Yeah, they had... Oh, my God. She really did. And I was one of the few people that she loved because she and her granddaughter, Noreen, who we have a site on Facebook, the Breezy Corners site. And,
no
kidding. All these people are... They're so, you know, they're incredibly whatever. And... you get to hear where they're up to and what they're doing and everything.
I remember one night, I forgot the name of the place I was working, but they were very rude. I mean, some of those audiences were really terrible. They would, you know, the shows would go very late because I'd have to do the early shows at the Raleigh and Kutcher's and Neverly and Fallsview, and then the late shows would go on like at 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, in the bungalows. By that time,
they
were wasted, and they were really insulting to me. And, you know, somebody said something to me, which I won't repeat on the phone here. But I said, all right, you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to do an impression of a comedian leaving a bungalow colony. They went, oh, yeah. And in those days, the bungalow colonies, you could pull the car right up to the side.
Yeah.
So I walked out the door. I got in my car, and I drove away. And I saw them through the mirror. They were looking out the window like, where are you going? Are you kidding me? I just drove away. And the agent called me the next day. They said, what happened? I said, I never want to work bungalow colonies again. I'm not going to put myself subject to this abuse that I take there. Forget it. I'm not doing it. And I never did them again.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, she had like a 9 o'clock show. Where she allowed all us, you know, all of us to come, you know, the people in their, you know, 20s, to come. And then she would have one later for people. But basically, my parents were sleeping. They didn't go to that.
But
there were people, she had a bar, whatever. But the one thing about Edith Miller is that he didn't get drunk and sit in her shows. And she had people. She was good.
She was a tough woman,
great.
I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I know
she
was tough. That I do know. You know,
she was tough
on the entertainers. She was really tough on entertainers. I worked a place one time. I was doing an impression of Tom Jones, and these people were younger, but they were obnoxious. And all of a sudden, somebody throws up a pair of underwear, you know, like Tom Jones. They used to throw their underwear.
Yeah, I've been through Tom Jones.
It landed on my part of my face, on my shoulder. What they did was... They took a bottle of mustard and they put mustard all over the underwear.
Oh, that's horrible.
And threw it at me and it landed on my face and everything. And I says, you people are ridiculous. And that's another place I started to leave. And they said, you're not leaving. They blocked the door on me. I says, you can block the door all you want. You see these chairs here? You want to wear them? I said, because if you don't get out of the way, you're going to wear these chairs. They're going to be all around your neck, your head. I'm getting out of here. Because I was a little tough. I didn't take too much crap. So now I get in the car, and the agent was there. Where are you going? What happened? I says, you saw what happened. I'm not going to do this. This is why I don't want to work these places. So I get in my car, and they surround my car. I says, you all have three seconds to move, or I'm driving through the whole bunch of you. And the agent's going, you better get out of his way. Get out of his way. And I revved up the car, vroom, vroom, vroom. I said, 1, 2, 3, and I took off, and they scattered. They scattered. And I never worked there again either. So, but that's part of the business, but they don't have to be that way. They didn't have to be that way. This place was noted for that. Every comic that went there always had a bad thing to say about this particular place.
Well, we went to Breezy Corners for a lot of years, and then I was in a bad car accident, so we stopped going, and then we went back later on. But that's why I don't drive. It was a horrible, horrible thing. And we used to go to a little place that was right near the Pine Lodge Hotel in Monticello. It was called April Sunrise Cottages. And when Mr. and Mrs. April sold it, it was like, forget it. So, it was like a little, it had like 12 families. They all belonged to, they were all mine. We couldn't get away with anything. Yeah, it was cute. They didn't have a camp or anything. But the parents put on their own shows for themselves.
Yeah, there were places that did that, yeah.
Yeah, my father, they did this impersonation of the mock wedding or something. I think my father was.
Yeah, they used to do that, yeah.
Yeah, it was
hilarious. Yeah, we did that when I was the social director at the Villa Maria.
That was hilarious. So I did some research, haha. And I found out you did a role on The Sopranos and a few other programs. Tell everybody about that. That's interesting.
Oh yeah, well I did a guest spot on Sopranos. It wasn't really a big thing, you know. I did a scene with Michael Imperioli and Ray Abruzzi and James Gandolfini, who was a great guy. I mean, when he died, everybody was shocked.
Yeah.
And I played the boss of the Bronx, and you know, it was when Michael was writing his script, and he was looking for some people to put up money to make the film. And he comes to me, and then I argue with Gandolfini because he says to Michael Imperioli, I thought I was going to be involved. He says, every time I ask you, you came up with nothing. I came to Tony, and he's thinking on putting the money in. And I says, I'll let you guys handle this. Let me take the script home. I'll show it to my wife, and I'll let you know what I'm going to do. So then I leave, and then they hash it out amongst themselves, whatever happens. So, but I did that. I did The Fugitive. I did Law and Order Criminal Intent. I did Law and Order Criminal Intent. I had a nice role in that. The movies I've done Rounders with Matt Damon. I did Out for Justice with Steven Seagal. Over the Brooklyn Bridge with Sid Caesar and Elliot Gould. I did a whole bunch of stuff. I did Love Is All There Is with Joe Bologna and Renee Taylor, which was a wonderful movie. I had a great time doing that because all my friends were in it. Lainey Kazan, Connie Stevens, Dick Van Patten,
I love
April
Connie
Goda.
Stevens.
Yeah, she's a great gal.
Oh, I love
so,
Connie
you know,
Stevens.
I did a whole bunch of stuff.
That is so amazing. But you know, I looked up. I did a lot of research. I said, Googled and stuff, and I found that you performed with in 2013 with one of my favorite singers in the whole world, James Darren.
James Darren, yeah, what a great guy!
James Darren. Yeah.
Yeah, we worked at QPAC, the Queens Performing Arts Center in Queens.
Yeah.
We had a great time together. We made a nice relationship. We bonded with a nice relationship, and. See, I never met James Darren before that date. I knew him. Mm-hmm. I knew of him and everything like that. I met him years ago in Atlantic City briefly.
Mm.
But we really had a great time. We went out to eat afterwards, and we reminisced about the old days and when he lived in Philadelphia. And what a great guy. Jamie Darren was a terrific guy.
That is
and
so
it was really fun working with him.
You get to work with the nicest people. So if you had to pick the five most memorable people that you work with, who would they be?
Robert Goulet.
Oh, nice.
Was wonderful to work with. He was a friend. As a matter of fact, when I opened for him in Vegas at the Dunes Hotel, he would do shtick behind me backstage and play pranks on me. I mean, he was just a wonderful guy and a playful guy and a kind gentleman. I'll never forget once I was on stage and I see a golf ball rolling across the stage.
Oh, God.
While I'm working. I said, what the hell is that? And he comes out with a golf club and a golf shirt on. He says, you mind if I play through? I said, are you kidding me? I mean, he did some nutty things to me. But I got back at him. I'll tell you what I did.
Oh, goody.
You know, he goes out. He likes to go out into the audience when he's singing, on a clear day, rise and look around you. So he's out. He goes out in the audience, and he does that, and he kisses the women's hands and everything like that. So I had some friends of mine. I says, I'm going to get him tonight. Tonight's my closing night. Now, tonight I get even for everything he's done to me. So I dressed in drag, believe it or not. They got a wig. One of the dancers in one of the other shows got me a wig, a dress. They put lipstick on me, earrings, a whole bunch of stuff. And I sat out in the audience. And I was smoking a cigarette. And he's out in the audience singing, and the spotlight's falling, and I don't turn around to acknowledge him. And he stops the band. He says, what's the matter, honey? He says, you come to the show. He says, you don't like my singing? Because I wasn't turning around to him. Everybody was looking at him but me. So I stood up and I says, not only don't I like your singing, I don't like the way you dress. And he looked and he saw it was me and he grabbed me and we both fell to the floor. It was hysterical. The place went nuts. And he was interviewed in the magazine a few years later, and he talked about that because they asked him, who have you had fun with working with together? And he told that story. And
he was
fantastic. He was fantastic. I worked with Tony Bennett. I worked with, let's see, who else?
He's one of my favorite people.
Oh, Tony's my favorite. My favorite. I worked with the Lennon Sisters years ago. And Jerry Vale and I worked together a lot. Jerry was a dear friend of mine, and I miss him so since he passed away. And Al Martino also, very dear friend of mine. Mm. And we've worked together a lot. I worked together a lot with both of them, and we were like buddies. They would call me up to tell me jokes every 2 weeks. They were fantastic. I used to hang out with them in California. They're really great guys. You know, there was some, you know, pains in the asses that, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and I don't even want to mention them because they're not worth mentioning. But
that's true.
I talked about them in my book, you know, so if anybody wants to read my book, they'll see who I'm talking about. But I had fun with a lot of different people. Susan Anton was one of them.
Oh,
even
nice.
She went as far as, and not too many stars do that. She says, how do you like that, Sal Richards? Wasn't he terrific? What a pleasure to have him on my show. Sal, please come out and take another bow. That was very gracious of her to do that. That was very nice of her. Because what does it take? I mean, you're in the same business. Your stature makes you a little better, a little more monetarily, but that doesn't make you a better person.
That's true.
So, you know, that's why I've done the same thing. I've always acknowledged my opening acts when I started headlining. So, you know, that's just a handful. And then after opening for these people for years, I wound up working in Atlantic City. I went to the Claridge Hotel. As a matter of fact, I worked there with the Lennon Sisters, and the CEO and president asked if I'd be interested in doing a lounge show there. And I said,
what the
hell? Are you going to pay me? Yeah, of course. I wound up working there with a lounge show. They built another room to hold 300 people. And they asked me, who do I want to bring in to work with me? And I says, my buddy, Buddy Greco. I said, Buddy and I have been friends for years.
Oh,
right now
I love
he's
him
working.
Too.
Yeah, he's working at the Golden Nugget in Elaine's. I says, but it's a 85-seat room. I says, I think it'll be a great show. Well, let me tell you something. When Buddy and I started there, the lines were around the block to get into that room, two shows
a
night, 6 days a week. And we did that for 2.5 years. It was amazing. And Buddy was great to work with. And a fun guy. And I'll never forget, we had a night there, New Year's Eve. The hotel invited all the stars that were appearing in town to come to a late show that we were going to put on for the performers. It's time for the entertainers to be entertained. So we invited everybody that was in town. And who showed up? Donald O'Connor, Rita Moreno, Gloria Loring, Fred Travellina, Peter Allen. That's just to name a few. And I brought them all up on stage with us, and we all wound up singing together. I got it on film, too. I got to edit the film, though, because in those days they didn't have good cameras and stuff. But it was a most enjoyable evening to have all these people come up on stage. And Donald O'Connor was a great guy. And Rita Moreno, I still talk to her today. She's fantastic. She is fantastic.
You know, that would be exciting because I'm so into music and I'm so into all of this stuff. I love it. My dad, when I was younger, just yesterday, I wish, my father had a friend that was the president of Sam Goody's. And, of course, I knew that he knew this person, but I didn't know that he was like the head of this thing. And he would get us tickets to the Apollo Theater or to anything. But if I was really good, and I was never bad, I was a very boring child. I never got in trouble, ever, ever. Now I do forget about it. He took us to the Ed Sullivan Show if we were really good, my sister and I, and we got all A's during the week, which was the only grade my mother would accept, so it didn't matter. And he would come up to the place, and he would say he would be a different person every week. It was hilarious because he couldn't be my father. One week he was a famous photographer. Another week he was somebody else because they left tickets for him at the at the window. And one week I said to him, Dad, what are you going to do? Because Ed Sullivan used to announce people in the audience. He would say, so-and-so's in the audience. I said, what are they going to do? They're going to say, Doc Swerdloff is here, the dry cleaner? I said, you're not going to get up if they say so-and-so. And we were praying that, I think one week they did it. My father just pretended that he wasn't there. He pretended to be Al Hart, a famous photographer. It was hysterical because you never knew. So, that it is so great that you thank people, because you know what, in this day and age, even today, I think the greatest thank you that I get is when I do a book review and somebody emailed me before and said, the author really loved what you write, would you do an interview? And I go I think I could fit him in about 10 years, whatever. But yeah, it's the nicest thing is just to say thank you and appreciate other people. So I also did some more research and found out you got a ton of awards too, didn't you?
Oh, well, I got a few awards. I won Entertainer of the Year in Atlantic City, and the Friars Club honored me as the hot comic, but that was a long time ago. And many years ago, I won Entertainer of the Year in, believe it or not, it was 1975 in the Catskills. They used to have the Mike Awards, and they would do it like a television show. It was really produced well, and I won Entertainer of the Year in 1975, and 3 years before that, I won the Most Promising New Act in the Catskills.
Nice.
It took me 3 years to win Entertainer of the Year, and then that was nice. And everybody was there. All the acts that worked the Catskills, and everybody from Mousie Lawrence to Freddie Roman to Dick Capri, Eddie Schaefer, Bernie Allen, Al Burney. There were so many. There were so many guys.
Did you ever meet George Burns and Gracie Allen?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, they were,
it's funny.
Oh, God.
It's funny
nobody appreciates their humor. I used to watch the old program. They're hilarious.
No, very hilarious. They were wonderful. They were wonderful. I'll tell you how I met them. The Friars Club had a testimonial for the Sunshine Boys when the movie came out. And they had Walter Matthau and George Burns. And a whole bunch of other people on a dais. So as a member of the Friars, I was invited, and, we met him in the green room, and we said hello and stuff like that in passing. It was just in passing, meeting these stars and everything, because I was still a kid then, Well, I wasn't a kid, but, I was new to them. So now I'm appearing at the Concord on a Friday night, 3,000 people. I'm there Friday.
Wow.
George Burns is there Saturday. George Burns comes in to my Friday show with Philly Greenwald, who was the entertainment booker there, and his managers and his agents, and they sit ringside. I go on and I do my show. And then I said, ladies and gentlemen, I am so honored tonight. I says, sitting in the audience tonight, I said, is one of the greatest. You're going to see him here tomorrow night. I hope you don't mind if I just mention that he's here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to Mr. George Burns. So he gets up and he takes a bow. And I says, Mr. Burns, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell you that I was at the testimonial they did for you at the Friars a couple of years ago for the Sunshine Boys. I says, I was the guy at table 65 with the blue suit on. he wouldn't know who I was from Adam. So he got up and he said, let me tell you something. He says, watching you tonight, you should have been on a dais. I said, what? I was thrilled. Okay, so that goes. The show is over. I finish. I go in my dressing room and to change and everything. And I get a knock on the door and they said, are you busy? I said, no, I'm getting ready to leave. They says, well, some people want to see you. It was George Burns and Jerry Levy, who is a manager from California, and a few other people, and the booker for the hotel, and they sit me down in the dressing room, and George Burns wants to talk to me. And I was flabbergasted. I could not believe it. And I had a conversation there for 45 minutes with George Burns.
Oh, wow.
And the manager, Jerry Levy, told me to give him a call, and he wound up signing me as my agent and manager. And he was from California, and he was going to see what he could do, although nothing ever happened with that. But the fact that I met George Burns, he says, when you're out in Vegas, he says, I'd like you to come to the house for dinner. I said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Hold on one second. We all have dogs, and mine is starting to bark, and I don't know why he's barking.
What's
hey,
the matter?
Come here. Come outside. Come on.
You want to say hello on the phone?
Huh? No, no, no. Come on. Come on.
My brother does that with Bella, his dog. He calls, she gets on the phone and barks at her aunt.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? He stands by a little cabinet we have here. He knows where his cookies are. And he stands here in the box. Come on, Bravo. Take it outside. Come on. Come on.
He wants a treat.
He wants a treat. He tells
me,
well,
of course he does.
Here.
Yeah.
Come out. Come out. Here. Come on. There it is. You want it? Get it.
Oh, you're going to have to go for it. You can't just, you know, after all, you have to earn
it. No,
again.
I want him to get it so I can have him come outside with me on the patio and I can shut the door and he don't bark in the house.
Oh, nice. I don't even hear him. It's
come
okay.
On. Come on. Go ahead.
Okay, well, so Phil's doing that. I'm going to tell everybody that next Thursday at 10, I have internationally famous author Brian Freeman, Season of Fear. And if you read the book, you're going to be in fear. It's fantastic. The week after,
really?
On May 14th, I've got a publicist, Kevin Finley. And he's going to talk about how to get your book published and the job of a publicist. He's really good. And he's done me tons of favors, and he helps me promote my magazine, MJ Magazine. And we're looking for people to write articles about the music industry this time. I'm going to have a sports desk. I'm going to have starred reviews. I'm making it all brand new. And I would love somebody to write articles on fashion and music and what's happening now or what's happening in the past. So if you're interested, people, just private message me on Facebook or email me at gabino49@gmail.com and let me know what you have. We're going to have flash fiction, and we're going to have a graphic novel this time. We've got a whole bunch of people, some young people that are writing for the magazine. It's a magazine for authors, writers, publishers, anything, and it's in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, that I created it. And that's
that
probably
sounds wonderful.
It is. It's fantastic. It's something that I had to do when my sister died because she got me to do this. And it's got book reviews that I write. It's got book reviews that other people write. It's got writing tips, short stories, articles, what's my opinion column. And I have an opinion, let me tell you. You never know what I'm going to put up.
Yeah, you do. And you write great reviews. You get really into the depth of the author. And I know that for a fact. And I take this opportunity right now to thank you verbally and vocally and orally that I really appreciate that review that you got so in depth and you explained. I mean, after reading that, I wanted to read my own book.
The book was great. So tell everybody about it, because I have an article that they did in a paper that was good, but not as good as my book review. Sorry, people.
No, your
Behind
book
the Laughter,
great.
Hidden Tears by Sal Richards. So tell everybody why you wrote it, and you keep laughing, which is great. Because you know what?
Well,
we've all been through, and we got to keep smiling or else
forget
it.
You know what
it.
I want to ask you, if you feel like talking about it, was your sister ill?
I can talk about it, trust me. I'm not really sure what happened. I was home, and I had just spoken to her that morning at 7:15, and my mother had Alzheimer's, and my book, In Her Own Words, just came out on Alzheimer's. It's my mother's true story. And to be very honest, my sister called me. We used to kid around a lot. And she was the only person that I could, you know, act stupid with and carry on. So she called me up at 7:15. She said, did you give Mom her medicine? I said, no, she's waiting for you. You know, it's Saturday. You could do something. You know, you're not working. She was going to Zumba class.
Right.
We both keep in shape. She went to Zumba class, and she said, I have something to tell you. Sal, she never told me. Something was bothering her, and I know it. About 2:30 that afternoon, but I didn't know it for a fact, she keeled over, and she had a massive heart attack.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. My sister was young.
Oh, my God.
And she had a massive heart attack caused by an argument with someone. Let me just put it that way. A bad argument. Mm-hmm, from what I was told.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
Yeah. The person did not call me, her sister, until 7 o'clock at night. That's when I found out. My niece and my nephew knew. No one thought to call the sister, the one with all the connections to all the people that could help her. She went to Syosset General because she worked for orthopedic surgeons, and the guy that she worked for was the chief of staff. And then they switched her to LIJ North Shore. By the time I found out, it was 7 o'clock at night, and I was there, like at 8 o'clock, running in traffic. I got there.
Yeah.
Someone told me, and I won't say who it is, you can figure it out, who was with her, said, you don't have to come. You know, we're going to just pull the plug, and she's not going to make it. I said, maybe you won't, because she's not going anywhere. I said, and I'm pulling rank on this one. I'm her sister, and you're just nobody. So when I got there...
Right.
They were ready to do something, and I said, I'm her sister, this is who I know, this is who I'm going to call, and I'm getting on the phone with the head of neurology now. I said, and I dare you to pull that plug, I said, because this hospital won't know what hit them. And I made a few phone calls, and because of who I know up here in the Bronx, I lived in the Bronx at the time, I knew the head of neurology of Einstein Hospital, I knew the head of aging, Dr. Joe Verghese. And I knew my own doctor, who's very powerful too, Joel Cohn. And all I had to do was say those three names, and the head of neurology came 1 minute later. She was in the hospital for about a month, and all this person wanted to do was pull the plug. She fell over at about 2:30, and he didn't call 911 for 27 minutes.
God, she lost oxygen to the brain.
Yeah, she lost the oxygen to the brain. She had anoxia, yeah. And I said, and he didn't. He said, I was trying to save her life. I said, well, in saving her life, you killed her. And I can't prove it. My doctor said she might have been gone, yeah. But you know what? I can't get the paramedic report, and I can't get the other reports because they won't give them to me.
How long ago was this?
My sister will be gone 5 years, July 8th, and when I said the sun was shining, the sun shines when she comes out. You know, that was funny because when she died, funeral and stuff, it was raining. I looked up at the sky and I go, Marcia, you will not have a funeral, and we will not talk about you in the rain. And
the
sun
came
out.
And the skies opened up and the sun came out. I believe
it. The sun came out, yeah.
I could say with authority, I know what you went through because our son was in a coma for 10 months, you know, as you read in the book.
Yeah.
And not to get too maudlin about it and go into it into any detail, but that's why I can relate because I know what you went through. Mm-hmm. So... let's hope they're both up there looking down right now and opening the skies and giving us all sunlight and happiness and help. That's all we can do. And never lose the memory of either of them. My son died 30 years ago.
Oh, God.
He would have been 53 this year. Yeah.
Yes,
so.
She was in her 50s, and she was... That Thursday before this happened... she came into the Bronx because we were doing something with my mom, and we used to take my mom out every week. And the two of us were walking in the street acting like two idiots. You know the Laverne and Shirley show that's the reruns on?
Yeah, right.
The two of us were doing the Shlemiel Shlemazel dance for my mother in the middle of the street. It was hilarious. She was going to celebrate her birthday, and she was, you know, we were all going to get together, whatever. My mom, you know, wasn't going to be able to come, but, you know, we were talking about it. She was on the phone before she left, and she called me that morning, and I never found out. I sort of figured it out, what she wanted to tell me, and it hasn't been the same since. You know, she was the glue that kept the family together. She made sure that everybody called my mom, and she made sure that my nieces and nephews would call me every single day. Well, I did. I was their homework partner, so I helped on the phone. And, you know, if anybody needed help with homework, because I taught for a million years in the New York City public school system, she would say, you know, call your aunt. She's a reading specialist. Call your aunt. She's this, whatever. And now it's just so different. Because
of course,
I have to remind them, I'm here.
With Sal Jr., he was his birthday was on December 26th. He went into the coma New Year's Eve. So it's so similar that it was her birthday. And well, listen, let's pray for them. And
that's right.
They're you know, everybody says they're in a better place, and I always say the better place would be here. But
that's right.
For their sake. For their sake, we know that they're being taken care of right now. So
well,
let's move on.
That's true. Well, that's true. So we've got, if you could do something else, what would it be? What else would you like to do that you've never, ever, ever done, ever?
Mow the lawn.
I would not do that. No. Not me.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell I would do. I mean, I, you know, I was always, I was a salesman when I was younger. You know, I guess, open a business, which I tried anyway. I tried to open. I had a restaurant down here in Florida, and I had it for a few years. And then I was going on the road, and I had people running the restaurant. And little did I know, they were pilfering from me and everything like that. And when I came back, I finally said, "That's it. I'm closing down. I'm selling. I want to get out. I can't do it anymore." And not only that, you know, they would call me, like if I was in Chicago, the manager would call me and said, "Listen, we're out of calamari." I said, "You're out of calamari, and you're calling me Chicago in my dressing room?
Don't order it.
Where am I going to get you? Want me to get you some calamari now in Chicago and send it to you right away?" I says, "Idiot, schmuck. Go tell the people I'm sorry, we're out of calamari. Can we offer you something else? We'll give you some shrimp. We'll give you some... offer something else. I got to teach you how to do this? You tell me that you're a restaurant manager and you don't know how to approach the people?" So finally I said, "That's it. I can't do this anymore." And I had a great club, too. I had entertainment Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. People used to come in here from all the condos and dance their night away and have a great time, but I just couldn't do it anymore. Took too much life out of me.
You needed restaurant stakeout. You needed Willie to come in and help you out. Then what can I tell you?
Yeah, right. But they weren't around then. But I it was just too many hours for me. I couldn't do both. I had to make a decision because I thought I was going to retire then. This was only about 8 years ago. And
yeah,
I said, "All right, I'll get
a
nice little restaurant." No, I don't think so. Not now. I told a friend of mine yesterday, I said, "I think I'm going to retire." He said, "Are you crazy? You're not going to retire." I said, "Listen, I didn't say tomorrow. I said maybe when I'm about 88, 89. I don't know. It all depends. Depends on how I feel.
You're not going to retire. You got too much. And, you know, that's funny because when I retired, I said, I taught reading and to kids with learning disabilities. And it was a very sad day because I love what I was doing. So doing this, I have to tell everybody, I love doing book reviews. So I've got about 35 books inside staring at me. And I got two done this morning. Not bad, right? And maybe one more later. I read I try not to read too fast, but I read fast. I do the radio shows, and I have 12 books. And like I said, my mother's book just came out, The Vanishing Mind of Ruth Sverdlov, in her own words, an Alzheimer's sufferer's journal. And Carla Negus gave me a blurb for the front cover, which I thought was really cool. And,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, I do. And Vincent Zandri gave me one, and Dennis Palumbo, a lot of nice people read it because they can identify with the fact that Alzheimer's is horrible. And the proceeds from the book goes to a special foundation, Montefiore Einstein, set up by Dr. Mark Miller in memory of my mom. But, you know, I don't get paid to do book reviews or the radio show, people. Just clearing it up there. Friend doesn't get paid to do anything.
Yeah. You do it with love, that's why.
I'm doing something because I can't sit around and do nothing. And read it. My mother made me read 10 books a week, and this is what happens as a result of taking notes and reading. So
she did the right thing for you.
She ordered. My mother had a lot. If you ever watched Fresh Prince from Bel-Air and saw the schedule for Ashley on the wall, that was my mother. She had
really?
Schedule from the minute, from the minute I woke up, dancing lessons, which I hated, piano lessons, which I love, violin lessons, Hebrew lessons, all of that I loved. And dancing lessons, when you're overweight and you weigh 180 pounds and you're 11 years old or 12, and my sister could do it, you just didn't, forget it. So what's next for you? And I know you have a show Friday in St. Petersburg.
Oh, yeah, Friday night I'm working in St. Petersburg with two real funny guys, two friends of mine. They're calling it the Friars Comedians. It's myself, Dick Capri, and Stewie Stone.
Nice.
And we're working at the club in Treasure Island in St. Petersburg.
That
As a matter
nice.
Of fact, I'm leaving today. I'm going to be leaving today because I don't like to travel on the day that I'm performing because it takes too much out of me. I like to get there a day before, relax, get the lay of the land, and have some dinner, and you know, and then go to rehearsal the next day and do the performance. And then my wife and I are going to stay an extra day because it's our anniversary. It happens to be our anniversary.
Oh, nice.
Tomorrow.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. How
Thank
many
you.
Years?
Oh, I don't think my wife is going to want me to say that. I got to hold
a lot.
That back.
Yeah,
but
we're coming
up
to 18.
You're coming up to 18
husband,
years?
18 years. My husband looked at me. He says, I'm stuck with you 18 years. I go, you're going to be stuck with me 118 years. Tough on you.
18 years. I got ties older than that. So, you know.
Yeah, 18 years.
You know, listen, I married a long time. I got a wonderful woman. She stuck by me through the thick and the thin of it. We went through a lot with losing our son. And, you know, and we just struggled along together and with a lot of love and caring. So I'm very fortunate that way that I've always had her with me and by my side. So, and I have my other son, Guy, who's also a comedian, and he travels around the country doing comedy. So, and he's a wonderful actor, so he's trying to break into some acting. And he's done a couple of small roles here and there, but things are coming along. Things are coming along.
You know, it would be so much fun.
And I got a script. I got a script that we just finished writing called Like Father, Like Son. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And it's based on our life. It's based on our life. It's about a father and son, the father being in show business all his life and the son just starting out in show business, thinks he knows everything about show business and the father knows nothing. And it's a heartwarming story about what the father and son went through in their lives. And ironically, the father in the script opens up a club, a nightclub, and because he wants to retire. And I base it on our life, actually base it on our life. Then I get misdiagnosed, and I think I'm dying, and I want to go on one more tour around the country. and I want to take my son with me. And there's a lot of crazy things that happen, and we meet a guru who is supposed to be able to help me survive. At a big camp out west, like a Marashi Hashi place or something like that, and that's Vincent D'Onofrio, who's a wonderful actor and a great friend. He's a wonderful guy, Vincent D'Onofrio. I just did a movie with him, as a matter of fact, called what is it called? Crackers. You know, it's based on Crackers. Meaning the nutcrackers that you get for Christmas. It's with Vincent D'Onofrio, Dan Hedaya, Brenda Vaccaro, myself, Anthony Lachura from Boardwalk Empire. It's a real funny comedy. It's real funny. My cousin Gregory Principato directed it and wrote it. And as a matter of fact, he's the one that also directed my documentary that was done a while ago called Mr. Laughs, A Look Behind the Curtain.
I think I was going to ask that question. I looked up everything. But I want to read the screenplay. You have to send it to me when it's done so I could review it and give you nice lots of stars.
Well, I don't think we can release it until we get distribution.
Yeah.
You know, because we're working on a distributor now, as a matter of fact.
We're going
to go on crowdfunding, you know, Indiegogo or Kickstarter. To raise the money to shoot the film. So what we want to do first is shoot a teaser, a sizzle reel, about a 3-minute sizzle reel with different scenes from it.
Nice.
And put it on so they could see what the movie is going to be about and raise some money to shoot the actual film. And my very good friend Steve Schirripa is in it too. He plays my friend Tiny. And my son is in it, my son Guy. And It's a real great script. It's a good script. It's funny. It's heartwarming. It's got a lot of people will relate to it because it's about life.
You know, Channel 13 has something called the Reel Reel Show, R-E-E-L, where they actually, if you download your small documentary or your movies or something, they put it on television.
Yeah?
Yeah, Channel 13, actually it does. It's called the Reel, and I'm positive that they still do it, yeah.
Channel 13 in New York?
Yeah, Channel 13 in New York, yeah. I'm not sure if 21 does it, but I know that Channel 13 has something with the Reel because my hairdresser's son did some documentaries and did some teasers and did some screenplays and stuff, and they put it on there.
I'll check it out. I'll have my cousin check it out. He's the director and producer, so I'll have him check it out.
Yeah. So before we go, where can everybody learn more about Sal, and are you going to write another book?
I was really thinking about it. I may write another book. I may pick it up from where I left off.
Oh, nice.
And continue the fact that, here I am. I'm still around. And let me tell you what's been happening since my last book. And go from there, and talk about putting the movie together and other things that I'm doing and things that I've done. You know, I got to make it interesting, though. I got to try to make it. See, when I wrote the other one, I wrote very small, very fast chapters. I wanted it to be a quick read to get into it and to know me right away. You know,
that's what made it great to read. That's what made it great to read. That's what made it great to read because some books when the chapters are too long, Fran falls asleep. Yeah.
Yeah, well, because, I think if you dwell on the chapters and you go too long and you get too, you get too many points in, and they got to go back to a few lines and say, wait, what was that all about?
Yeah, exactly.
Get to the story, get to the beginning, do the middle, and then the punchline. It's like being a comic.
That's right.
You know? So I'm thinking about writing a book, and I'm hoping this movie is coming up. And I got some other dates coming up around the country. I'm going to be in Pennsylvania at the Raz Room in New Hope, Pennsylvania. I'm going to be at the Villa Roma, upstate New York. And then I have a whole bunch of dates down here at the end of this year into 2016. They're already booking me into 2016. I do the condo circuit down here, which is really great because these audiences are wonderful and they love entertainment and they pack the place. So,
that is great. My whole family's in Florida. I'm the only one that's up in New York.
Where do they live in Florida?
My niece is in Coconut Creek. My nephew is in Sunrise. My cousins are in Pine Gables and Coral Springs and Plantation. My aunt used to be. Are you in Boca Raton? Because my aunt used to be. But I have a whole bunch of friends from Breezy Corners that are in Boca Raton and Banyan Springs.
Right.
In Banyan Springs. They're
Banyan
all there.
Banyan Springs. I know where, I know where Banyan
Springs
is. That's
where my aunt used to live.
As a matter of fact, I'm
going to
be at Sunrise. I'm working at Sunrise, I think, in January.
Oh, nice.
Sunrise 4, I think I'm going to be.
Well, you have to come up to Westchester, New York.
Yeah, I used to work up there years ago, but there's no place to work up there anymore.
They only have the Westchester Community Center, I think, and the Elmsford Dinner Theater. They don't have
Dinner Theater.
Very
they
many
used to be,
places.
They used to have the Westchester Theater, which was great.
Yeah, they do. They have the Westchester Community Center, where they have all sorts of exhibits and stuff like that. And then they have the Elmsford Dinner Theater, which is not, my kind of thing. I don't know. But you know what would be fun?
Well,
I don't know. I thought about this a thousand times because you know a lot of people in the music business. So does Donald Riggio and so does Jeff Marsh. And I would love to put together a show of people, old-time performers, and where they are now. I would think that a lot of people would listen, like they're listening now.
Well, they might, but I don't think I'd fit in, as
you would
an old-time
fit in.
Performer.
You're a young guy.
I
know. I walk into my niece and she looks at me. She says, "For somebody your age," I go, "Shut up. You better be quiet." She says, "You look like you look young." Well, I dress differently. I don't like the old whatever.
Well,
and,
you know what it is. It's all in the mindset and how you feel and how you present yourself. And you know, if you want to be old, you can be old, and you can talk
not
old
me.
And say, "Well, it was nice talking to you." And I got to go take my medicine now. So I'll call you again another time. Okay, you're feeling better. You're belching a lot.
that would probably be a great stick for one of your shows, because, I mean, that's fetching is what I don't do that.
Yeah, I do stuff.
I don't do that. No, I don't do that.
I do stuff about people when they sit down, they make sounds now when they sit down and when they get up. Years ago, you just sat down. Now they sit down, they go, oh, ah.
I know.
And then they get up, they go, all kinds of aches and pains and everything. But like I said, it's a mindset.
People don't realize that you do your show without profanity, and that's what makes it hilarious.
No, I don't do it. I never did. I will not.
That's right. That's why you're so funny. And that was the basis of Josh's composition. Some people said you need it. I said you don't. And that was
even before
I saw what you wrote. I said you don't. And I explained why. And I explained, you know, the good comics like Lucy and Desi and George Burns, and Gracie Allen she was funnier than anybody in the world. She was hilarious.
Yeah, she was.
And
great.
Some of the other all-time comedians, all the older comedians, Bob Hope. I go, you just had a look on their face. I said, and they didn't need to use the bad language. Whereas young people today, if they don't hear the words, they forget it.
Exactly. And it's all, you know, you can get the laughs without using the vulgarity, and it's not necessary to use it. You know, you could be funny without it. And when they rely on using the dirty words, that's a crutch for them. They think, the audience is going to dig this. And some of them do, because a lot of the audiences in the comedy clubs are young people. But in comedy clubs, they got older people. When I say older, I'm not talking about decrepit. I'm talking 50, 60 years old, you know.
Yeah.
And they cringe when they hear those words, you know. And some of them are really, you know, offensive. They're offensive. There are still some comics out there that don't relate to it, that don't need it, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld and Kevin James and people like that. They're
hilarious.
Don't need to use dirty words.
No, they're funny. They're hilarious, too. I mean, I went to a comedy club when my brother used to work in a different bowling center that we shall not name, forget them. And there were three comedians, and each one was worse than the next. And my brother put me up front. Bad thing to do, because I had a big mouth. And the guy looked at me, he says, "You're not laughing." I said, "I don't think you're funny." He said, "Why?" I said, "Because I haven't heard anything coming out of your mouth that would make me laugh other than be nauseous." And I said, "You're so vulgar." I said, "You're over the top." And he looked at me and he thought that I was going to back off. And my friend doesn't back off for anything. I just thought it was hilarious. He was horrible. And the three of them, each one was worse than the next. But the last one was so offensive that people walked out. Literally walked out.
That happens sometimes. They don't learn. You know, it's a shame. And some of them have talent, and they don't work on their talent. They just think that by doing what they do is going to work for them. And sometimes a lot of them don't know when they're not going over. They don't realize, hey, this isn't going over. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah,
if it's not working,
even realize.
Go away. It's not working, man. Good night. You've been wonderful. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, if the audience is too quiet.
And they insult the audience. What's the matter? You people are dead. This is the first time I ever saw dead people smoke.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Was the ground cold when you got up this morning? You know, these are all stock lines. But you're not supposed to insult an audience. If they're not laughing, move. Be able to turn around and switch right in the middle until you find something that they like.
You should. The only person that I think that is funny, I mean, he is funny, is Louis Black. He's hilarious. He's funny.
Oh, he's hilarious. He is hilarious.
He uses it, but in such a way that you crack up. He's funny.
It's the content on how you use it. I mean, if you're doing it to be offensive, that's one thing. But if it meets within the realm of the comedy, then it works. Like George Carlin was a master at it.
Yeah.
Joan
Rivers was
Carlin.
Hilarious, too. Did you ever meet
Joan
her?
Joan Rivers. Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh. I got pictures with her and everything. I knew her from the Friars Club. She was wonderful.
That was so sad. But I want to thank you so much. And,
thank you, Fran. It's been my pleasure.
It's my pleasure, too. And if you ever want to come back on again and you have another book or you get the screenplay, I want to be the one to promote it because that's fun.
Okay, and I'll be in touch with you. And good luck with your promotions and everything you're doing, and good luck with this blog.
Good luck tomorrow night on your show. Make them laugh.
Thank you, sweetie.
Bye.
Thank you, honey. Great talking
You're welcome.
To you. Bye-bye.
Bye.